dogs. Meow, 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 meow. Whee.
Meow. Teasing you with liberty and tickling your freedom funny bone in the wee hours of the night live. I am Derek J. I'll be your host tonight, broadcasting from a hippie compound in Keene, New Hampshire. Michael Dean, our regular host, couldn't make it. He's been transported to a Mad Max-style parallel universe. Hopefully he'll be back tomorrow. With me across the interwebs is Lusander Fien.
Hey, 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 Derek. From what I understand, Michael is on some tropical island being paw-fed grapes by cats and waved with a palm frond.
Lucky guy. He gets all the palm fronds. Well, Lou, we're going to bring the wonderful audience on a journey across the country to bring them stories of farmers disobeying government folks. And that's actually how we met. Yeah, it is a beautiful thing. Good food and good people. And that's actually how we met. Do you remember, the situation in which we met, Lou?
Yeah, that was about a year ago in northern Michigan, the northern part of the Lower Peninsula. We met up at Mark Baker's place, Baker's Green Acres. And that was for there was a court hearing on Friday. And then on Saturday, he had a celebration of the farm where took everybody on a tour, made a wonderful lunch, showed people how to process a pig safely and properly, and just a wonderful time.
Yeah, I learned lessons there about farming and about how to properly butcher a pig that I never thought I would have seen so up close. We actually were able to get video. He had a full audience. He explained all the pieces of the pig, and it was a really in-depth adventure, I'd say. And more than that, he's a disobedient farmer, and that's what I love. People who are willing to say, I'm going to feed my community, whether the government people like it or not.
He's a feral farmer.
A feral farmer? What does that mean?
It means he's wild and out of control. He's disobeying and not resting at the end of his leash like now, a good pet should.
He's in Michigan with you, and there's a lot of problems with food freedom in Michigan these days. Tell me what's going on with my family co-op. What's going on there?
Well, it's not just Michigan, as you alluded to in the opening. It's all across the country, and it's not just food. It's freedom in general, because government is basically growing, which is what it does. It grows until nothing else remains, but it is attacking the people and their food. And as we know, we can't survive without food, and having good food available is something that's absolutely essential for human life. Our first story comes from The Complete Patient, and it was written by David Gumpert, and that's thecompletepatient.com. Michigan food dump meant to send us all a message. Now, Michael and the gang covered this a little bit yesterday on the afternoon show, but in a nutshell, what happened was some goons from what's called MDARD, I refer to that as the Department of Making Everything Ungood, seized a refrigerated food truck from my family co-op, and 248 gallons of raw milk were put into a sprayer and then destroyed. 100 dozen eggs, that's 1,200 eggs, had to be broken, individually broken. And they also confiscated cream, butter, and cheese, the whole nine yards. And 248 gallons of milk, raw milk rather, and the eggs, that's enough to feed several families for a week.
Was the food unsafe?
There appears to be no assertion that it was unsafe. Mostly the assertion is that it was unlicensed, which means that they didn't go to the Mafia Don to get permission to operate in that territory in the manner that the Mafia Don prescribes. So
there must be some good reason why they would destroy 1,200 eggs and all those gallons of milk through a sprayer. They wouldn't just knock over some farmer, right? Would they?
Well, that would be a nice thing if it didn't work that way, but the vulture has to wet its beak. Mr. Gumpert put out another article, Friday evening, and going through all this stuff, it talks about why didn't Jenny Samuelson, who runs the My Family Co-op, why didn't she, you know, just disobey like Vernon Hershberger did in Wisconsin? But let me read a little bit of what we have here. In Michigan, the situation is different. Herd shares for raw milk are supposed to be legal, and that's what the co-op is. It's a way to get around all of the arduous licensing and retail permits and basically all the nonsense that goes along with running a business.
Well, herd shares I had never heard about before a few years ago when raw milk hit my radar, and I heard that there were farmers and community members who entered into private agreements that they would all own a cow, and that as part of owning that cow, well, the farmer, he would milk the cow, and then the other owners would receive the milk. And that's isn't that what a herd share is for raw milk, so that the farmer can distribute this milk and charge money, but he's really just charging for his labor. These people already own the milk that they're receiving, right?
Yeah, well,
it's a legal loophole, basically, so that people can have freedom.
Yeah, well, loopholes are what we breathe through to keep us from getting asphyxiated and just having all the oxygen cut off. But, yeah, so what you have is multiple people owning these cows. So the MDARD folks didn't just steal from one person. They stole from several people. And the herd share, as you mentioned, is a way for people to have a private agreement to own a part of this cow and get the proceeds from it. It's a private contract. It's an A and B conversation, and the state needs to see its filthy butt out of it.
Well, and it worked the same way in Wisconsin. Basically, with the story of Vernon Hershberger, he was put on trial for the crime of selling raw milk, but the jury was able to see through the facade that the government was putting up, that this was about community safety and protecting the consumer. And they saw that it was really about individuals who had a private contract to receive milk from a farmer. They had an agreement, and no one else had to take any part in that. And they saw the government as intrusive in that case. But Michigan's different somehow. So explain, why is Michigan different?
Well, Michigan is supposed to be different because There are supposedly more laws that protect the co-op and also Hill High Dairy. Yeah, Hill High Dairy LLC, which is the actual farm. So the farm and the co-op are separate entities. But according to Mr. Gumpert's article here, it says that herd shares are legal in Michigan, where kind of implies that it's not out in Wisconsin. So realistically, it's hard to say what exactly the whole hang-up is.
Well, it sounds like the government just wants her to get a license. So what's the big deal? Why shouldn't she get a license?
Why should she need a license?
Well, it's my understanding that in Michigan, there are certain restrictions. Like, if she were to get a license, right now she's selling raw butter and raw cheese, and those would not be permitted with a raw milk or with a herd share license, or whatever, this food handler's license, a food retailing license, all of these licenses that she would need to get from government, they wouldn't even give her permission to do what she's already doing. So it seems pointless that she would even ask for one. Seems like the smart thing to do is go the Vernon Hershberger civil disobedience route and say, look, I'm feeding my friends, my family, my community, and that's that. I'm not going to get your license. You can prosecute me. So what's she doing now? Well, I mean, what's the latest from MDARD?
Well, as of right now, she's not distributing the food the way that she was. So it appears that she's looking into, you know, what her options are. I placed a call out to the co-op yesterday morning, but it wasn't during regular weekly business hours, so I wasn't able to talk to her. I'm hoping that she calls back tomorrow and I can bring an update later on. But
have you been to My Family Co-op?
No, I haven't. I'd never even heard of it until this story, and it's probably about 3 hours north of me, but I'd have absolutely no problem shooting up there on a Saturday afternoon and taking a look at things or whatever.
How much are you invested into this food freedom issue, Lou? Is this just a passing fancy for you, or do you have raw milk in your fridge right now?
I'm not a super food freedom guy. I'm a freedom guy. And freedom is one piece. It's not just, you know, guns, weed. It's everything. It's right. Every last thing. I have no problem with raw milk. I drink it occasionally. It's not readily available. I have no problem with going and getting a half gallon over at the grocery store that I get my stuff at. I don't go through a whole lot of milk anyway. So,
well, it's getting harder for you to get raw milk because of government agencies like MDARD, which I didn't even know this government agency even existed. Same with not Vernon Hershberger, but in Michigan, the Michigan Department of Natural Resources is the one that went after Mark Baker, another farmer, just for raising pigs.
Yeah, Michigan Department of Destroying Natural Resources.
Right, and that's exactly what they did. Didn't they come to his farm and threaten to kill all of his pigs? And didn't they even kill some?
I don't know if they killed any of Mark's pigs. I do know that there was a farmer that rather than having the goons come out and slaughter his herd of pigs, he did it himself.
Wow, right. So tragic.
So it's kind of like a Stockholm Syndrome thing.
Well, I'm curious what MDARD will be doing next. Are they taking Jenny Samuelson of My Family Co-op to court? Is she facing charges?
As of right now, I'm not really sure what the future holds. She's one of many co-ops. She might just be the one that's on the radar right now. And as you remember with Mark, he was one of a couple thousand small farmers that was doing what he was doing. How many were raising his breed of pig, I'm not really sure. But I believe he said that there were like 2009 small farms that fit his category in the state of Michigan.
I just wonder about why these licenses ever came up. I mean, do we have any history of problems that needed fixing where the government stepped in to protect the health of the consumers, like MDARD claims to?
Well, I think it's your traditional corporatism or fascism, mercantilism, whichever word you want to use, protectionism. Now, the larger companies lobby for these restrictions and barriers to entry to keep new competition from entering the market. And then when people go around these restrictions, then they throw a fit.
You know, I'm reading this letter that MDARD sent out. I guess it's a press release about the issue. And they complained that the eggs hadn't been cleaned and still had dirt on them. Oh, God forbid there's a feather on your egg that you know that it came from a real chicken. Not one of those fake factory farm chickens. Hey, Freedom Fiends will be back right after this trip to the free market.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Freedom Fiends. Meow. All right, we're talking about raw milk, eggs that have feathers on them, illegal food. And the farmers who are courageous enough to disobey the government people when they say, get a license, or else we're going to destroy 1,200 of your eggs. We're going to throw your milk all over the land. Just dump it out. So there. Now get a license. Obey. We were talking about, when we left off, the eggs. The government was complaining about this co-op's eggs as being unrefrigerated. Tell me why that's important, Lou.
Well, it's not important. Funny thing, I'd never seen brown eggs in my life until I wound up in Germany. And I was like, what in the heck is the matter with these things? Why are they brown? Because I didn't know. Because everything that I ever ate just came from the grocery store down the block.
And, right.
You know, I had no idea about it. And that brings us to an important lesson. Food doesn't come from the grocery store. It comes from the farm. But what I've learned over the past couple of years is that over in Germany and the rest of European countries, they don't refrigerate their eggs. You can go get your eggs, pick them up off of a shelf, unrefrigerated, put them in your cart, and go on your business. And the reason that they're not refrigerated is because they're not washed. And with them not being washed, they're not, you're not taking off the membrane that protects the outside of the egg. And it's not really disease on the outside of the egg that you have to worry about. It's disease on the inside, because the shell and that membrane is what protects the inside.
Seems like a lot of pointless work to go through. I didn't even realize this, but according to the article at thecompletepatient.com, it's actually required in Europe that the eggs do not have refrigeration. And like you said, it, as a part of keeping them safe, that there's this natural membrane around the eggs that keeps them safe without any extra work or refrigeration. And to think about all the money that your local grocery store would save if they didn't have to put eggs in the refrigerated aisle. And you know that's the one that never has any kind of closing or door on it, because people are always grabbing at the eggs and the cheese. But imagine if this stuff didn't have to be refrigerated like it is in Europe.
Well, it doesn't have to be refrigerated, and eggs have about a 100-day lifespan normally. You can even coat it with, I believe it's mineral oil, and get 6 months out of them.
Yeah, but it's just so interesting to look at the words that the government people use when accusing these farmers of food crimes. The eggs were, quote, stored at improper temperatures. I mean, really?
Well, nothing moves faster than a bad idea and misinformation. going away from the farm stuff, I used to be an insurance agent, so I was licensed in the state of Michigan, and I dealt primarily with the senior market and Medicare products. And I can't tell you how many times I heard politicians from both sides of the aisle and also the news commentators and everything else explaining these different Medicare programs. And let me tell you something. Not only were they wrong, but had I done that as a licensed agent, I would have lost my license, I would have been fined, and I possibly could have even gotten jail time for saying the same things that they passed off as being truth.
Well, what do you think about this government agency's willingness to explain itself about the farm situation at My Family Co-op? I mean, at least they're willing to put out a statement. Of course, it's a bunch of propaganda and spin, but at least they're willing to explain themselves, right?
Well, I guess it is good that they're willing to show their ignorance and their lack of knowledge.
Yeah.
Because most government agencies aren't willing to do that. Usually, it's talk to our counsel.
Do you think they realize that they're sort of shooting themselves in the foot by putting out this bad PR spin? I mean,
no,
people are going to realize that it's... it's a bunch of baloney, but
no,
they're not buying it.
No, I don't think so one bit. I mean, there's nobody that is more unstoppable than the person that is wrong that thinks that they're right.
Yeah, one of the things that stuck out to me the most about their statement by MDARD, as you put it, the Michigan Department of Making Things Ungood,
yeah.
They said, quote, "It's important to note that herd share members were able to obtain raw milk from the farm throughout this process." You know, like, yeah, we were threatening the farmer and we were dumping out her milk and eggs, but the members were still able to get their raw milk. I mean, how could that be true? That's such doublespeak. On one hand, you're either tossing it out or you're giving it to the members. You can't have it both ways.
Well, it's also kind of empty to say that because the deliveries were made down in my area, which is about 3 hours away. So yeah, people could go up and they could drive 3 hours to get their 1 gallon of milk, but why should they?
Just get a license, why don't you? Why don't
you
just follow the rules? Why don't you obey? Kiss the ring. Beg permission.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Hey, there's some Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom's Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech as hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $5 for 10 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
On the Freedom Fiends. Welcome back, Lou.
Thank you very much, Derek. And if I may, I need to give a shout out to a friend of mine, Brandy, down in Texas. She's one of my face space friends, and she's really enjoyed listening to the show. She's only caught it a couple times, but she's learned a lot from it, and then just the different articles that I posted on there. So, hey, Brandy, glad you're listening. She's on her chromed robot turd.
Brandy better have a garden of some kind, or does she have a farm, perhaps?
I don't really know.
Well, all of this food talk, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that I put my hands in soil today and planted tomato plants, some banana peppers, and a few other non-GMO plants so that I could have harvest time yields of fresh vegetables come fall. And maybe even later on in this season. So it's very exciting. I like to take personal responsibility for my food. What about you? Do you have a garden, some sort of small farm you've got working?
Well, I live in an apartment, so for me to have a farm, it's not really doable.
Not possible, yeah. I enjoy that. I'm from Philadelphia originally. Now that I'm up in Keene, New Hampshire, it's much more fertile soil to work with. So I've installed a garden bed, was able to get some loam delivered, and put some plants in the ground. It's my first adventure doing gardening. Have you ever had a garden?
Oh, yeah. I grew up with gardens back in the 70s and early 80s. That was a common thing.
Did you have a license for that?
Nope, no license.
Well, what about the food? Were you able to share the food with your friends and neighbors? No government folks getting on your back?
Oh, regularly.
Okay. What kind of stuff did you grow?
We grew the basic stuff. We did really good with tomatoes, green beans, wax beans. The cucumbers were not too bad. The corn really did not do too well.
Mm.
But we weren't really doing it 100% for the food. It was more for the enjoyment of having a garden and the occasional fresh veggies.
Yeah, there's something sort of spiritual, I think, about having a garden, about growing food and being one with the earth and having the nutrients that you need to survive, but just being nurtured by you in your hands, you watering the plants. And I think a lot of these farmers who go up against the government, I think they have a powerful but peaceful force behind them, in that they've got this moral high ground, that they are the food producers. I mean, without them, people would literally be starving. This is one of those issues where, when it comes to freedom, rubber meets the road with food. When government folks are telling you you don't have the right to put that carrot in your mouth if you don't want to, or I mean, if you want the carrot or whatever kind of food, or the raw milk, the eggs that might have a feather on them, I mean, that is really where it's, I think, it's gone too far. It's crossed a lot of people's line in the sand, so to speak, and it's time for them to stand up peacefully, of course, and resist. But what is this woman, Jenny Samuelson, do we figure out what she's doing to resist, or is she just going to get a license from the Michigan Department of Making Things Bad?
Department of Making Things Ungood.
Right.
Like I said before, I'm really not sure what she's going to do, and even if she does get a license, the license doesn't permit her to distribute raw milk because Michigan is one of those tax farms where they don't recognize raw milk as being legitimate.
So there's no point in her complying anyway. Well, I hope she doesn't comply. I think the important part of the success of Vernon Hershberger, another farmer who produces raw milk and serves it to his community, the reason he was acquitted at trial was because he had the support of his community members. The fact that his customers were willing to come to court for every day for a week, was it? Over in Baraboo, Wisconsin. The trial lasted 5 days, went well past midnight on the fifth day on Friday. The jury was deliberating for something like 12 hours late into the night. They were able to see that even after midnight, the seats were full. The community members were there to support their man, their farmer, their food producer. And I think that the jury was able to see these people are not criminals. They're just people who want to be left alone and have a private agreement to receive fresh dairy from a local farmer, that there's no crime happening here.
Yeah. Now, with Vernon Hershberger, wasn't he actually convicted on one of the charges?
Yeah, unfortunately he was. So he was charged with four different crimes, all related to selling raw milk without a license. But the fourth charge, of which he was convicted, found guilty by the same jury who acquitted him on the rest of the charges, was for violating a probation order. Basically, you know, he was charged with selling this raw milk, and then the government folks wrapped up his own personal refrigerator in his kitchen, his pantry, in caution tape from police tape. They literally wrapped it in that yellow plastic tape and told him he's not allowed to open his own refrigerator to access the milk that he got from his own cows. Yeah. And he found that to be such an insulting gesture that he decided to cut the tape and open his own refrigerator. Now, he was found guilty of opening his own refrigerator, and that was called a violation of probation. But I don't think that the jury, if they had full information about what that was really all about, I don't think they would have convicted him. It was important that the judge restricted freedom of speech in that courtroom. The words raw milk weren't even allowed to be uttered.
Now, what I got from reading different articles and catching even your reporting on that was that when the jury found out that the judge's instructions and the double dealing that went along with the court system, that they said that they would have never convicted had they known the truth.
Yeah, that's right.
And that they also went to his sentencing and asked for leniency, and a couple of the jurors even joined his co-op.
Yes, more than a couple. It was a few, at least three members of the jury, of which there were only 12, of course, decided to become members of this so-called criminal's co-op. That he has a product that people want, and the government is trying to step in between customers and a willing provider. Now, there are a lot of parallels here to the drug war. It sounds like when we're talking about these raids on farms, a lot of the same terminology that one would use to describe a drug raid is exactly what happens on these farms.
Like SWAT team.
There are literally SWAT teams, men with guns, who raid these farms, and they are nothing more than armed bureaucrats. They should be carrying clipboards, not clips.
Yeah, and the really filthy little secret about this whole thing, well, it's not a secret because it's plain to see, but it's something that people don't really pay attention to. The agencies, meaning MDARD, the Department of Making Everything Ungood, the cops, whatever, the prosecutor and the judge all have the same employer. And if you want to get your day in court, basically, if you want the goons to leave you alone, then you have to go to the other goons and ask them to tell the goons to not be so goony. And if you have enough money to pay for your attorneys and all the fees that go along with this long drawn out process, then maybe, just maybe, you can get justice. Maybe the government will tell itself to quit acting so governmenty.
You know, speaking of getting the fees, I've been amazed to see the support network surrounding these farmers. You know, the people who are the customers of these local farms really care about the products that they're getting, and I think it has a lot to do with their health condition, that they depend on this raw milk and the nutrients that they get from these farms. The food is so nutrient dense that they depend on it for their own immunization from disease, that they can stay healthy. And so they're willing to fight to support this farmer, not, of course, not violently, but willing to go to the trials. And I think that's what's so important, that people are willing to do something to help the farmers. Well, tell me about what's going on in your neck of the woods with Mark Baker. He recently was in court, but I don't know what the situation is lately. Has he lost that trial? Has he given up the farm? Is he still fighting? Is there an appeal happening? What's going on with Baker's Green Acres in Michigan?
Well, I haven't spoken to him in a couple of months. Maybe I'll be seeing him in the next month or so. But
well, he was supported by an organization called the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. And you were talking about how much money it takes to fight the man in court. And it can be really tiring and it can be really confusing. I know for my own myself, I have no idea if I were charged with a crime, you know, what to do. To contact an attorney, to pay for attorney's fees. You know, most of these farms, they're just trying to keep the lights on. They don't have extra money for retaining lawyers like these mega firms have, you know, these factory farms. So the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund and other organizations like them at farmtoconsumer.org, they've been able to help farmers defend themselves when they don't have the money to do so, that they can contact attorneys and they can get people who specialize in this stuff to help push back when the man is trying to take the privacy away from these farmers.
Yeah. Earlier in the year, Mark was supposed to have a court hearing, and it was supposed to be basically to put a definitive end to this nonsense. He was suing for clarification. So if you have to sue the government to find out what they're talking about, then it's beyond redemption. But anyway, he had a court hearing set up, and they were supposed to define feral swine, because by proper definition, feral means out in the wild, not under human captivity, and they're defining feral as the physical characteristics, so kind of like right. An assault pig.
And just to recap, this is a farmer in Michigan who was already selling his pigs to restaurants, local businesses. They loved it, and no one had any problems with it, no complaints, until the government came in and accused his pigs of being feral.
Well, that's generally always the case. There's no complaints, and government creates a problem where none existed prior to that. But he was suing to get a definitive ruling on what a feral swine was, and he was hoping to knock all this nonsense out. We'll finish up with this when we come back. More Freedom Fiends right after this.
Worms.
Worms!
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean.
Oh, Derek.
This is what radio sounds like now.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to spy on you and keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially do not want you to torrent
Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
Freedom Fiends, tasing you with liberty. Welcome back. Lou and I are chatting about My Family Co-op. Their truck was raided. A lot of farmers across the country are dealing with this problem of selling illegal food. Who knew? Well, seems to be happening more and more. And Lou, you've got the information on Baker's Green Acres, a farm in Michigan that's being attacked by another ABC organization from the government for selling, what, feral pigs?
Yeah, for selling pork. And I don't think they're currently under attack. I think there's like a ceasefire or something going on.
Oh, I see.
Like maybe the Department of Destroying Natural Resources is reloading. But
oh, God.
Mark had a court hearing set up to where they were supposed to provide a definitive ruling of what a feral pig is. And basically, the state went to the courthouse and they tried to get this whole thing thrown out. Basically, they were going to wind up with a lot of egg on their face and looking really stupid, kind of like the MDARD statement on My Family Co-op. And essentially, the mouthpiece for the state said, oh, no, we don't have a problem with Mark's pigs. And, you know, at this time, but that could change later on. And that's what you can take from it.
That is so sneaky. Because what it sounds like to me is they've essentially said that all pigs in Michigan are illegal, except the ones that we say so. So, like, the default is that pigs are illegal, and if you have them, you could be in trouble, could be arrested, fined, or charged with serious crimes. Or you can get special permission from the government, and which could be revoked at any time if you get in out of their favor.
I equate it to the agitator in high school that challenges somebody to a fight and talks a bunch of smack, and then when the school bell rings and it's time to fight, says, "Oh no, I don't want to fight," and runs and grabs a teacher.
But it's really cool. I'm so into peaceful resistance. I'm obsessed with these farmers who have their different strategies. Everyone's trying something different. There's Michael Schmidt in Canada who has gone the total civil disobedience route. There's Vernon Hirschberger who played somewhere in between, going the legal and civil disobedience route. This My Family Co-op, it's unclear which direction they'll go. But then Mark Baker did something really unique by going on the offensive. He took them to court. He sued for clarification, which really, it's about positioning. You know, he's gaining the high ground or some sort of, I don't know, there's some sort of military analogy there. Although it's peaceful, of course. I think there's there's some good strategy to getting the government to be on the defensive, you know, going out the gate and saying, well, what does this mean? What does this ruling mean? And then they have to actually clarify their own bogus statement. So, yeah, they get egg on their face.
Yeah, well, the problem is with Mark going through the court system like that, not that he should have to go through the court system, but a lot of resources have been thrown down the rat hole.
Mm.
And they're gone forever.
Fair point.
So money that could have been used to expand his business, get new equipment, and since most of the money that he got came from donations, that came out of other people's pockets. So that money is now gone because it's been wasted on government.
Well, we know about Mark. What about Vernon Hirschberger? For folks who aren't familiar, here's his story. On June 2nd, 2010, representatives of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, DATCAP, conducted a raid at the Vernon Hirschberger farm. DATCAP agents intentionally destroyed nearly 300 gallons of fresh milk by pouring blue dye into the bulk tank, claiming the milk was adulterated and misbranded, even though there was no logical, factual, or scientific basis for this conclusion. The milk was unpasteurized, as all milk on all farms that is stored in bulk tanks is unpasteurized. The agents then placed a holding order on all the fresh, wholesome food in coolers on the property, most of which belonged to members of the Hirschberger's private buying club, and some which belonged to the Hernan Hirschberger family themselves. Outrageous government abuses. What's the solution? We've got urban solutions. When Freedom Fiends returns. Worms.
Worms.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges.
This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write worms in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Governments trying to shut down local farmers. What are they going to do about it? Farmers are going to keep growing awesome food, rawsome food, as it were. And Lou, we talked a lot in the first hour about the problems, about these farmers getting shut down by government agents, being raided by SWAT teams. It's like a drug war is happening on these farms, but it's really just about food. So the solution, let's talk of solutions. What do we do about government agents trying to stop private sales of local food? How do we solve this problem? Seems complicated.
Well, it's not just about food. About a week ago, I did a report about Uber and Lyft and how they are being attacked in Memphis. The city of Memphis is sending their police department out to ticket and arrest Uber and Lyft drivers. Meanwhile, Forbes has them listed as the fourth most dangerous city in the United States, but they have absolutely nothing better to do than to go target people that are providing transportation for folks.
Wow. So it's now a common theme, but what do you do? What's the solution?
I'm a firm believer in disobedience. I'm a firm believer in making the state completely irrelevant so that it dies, bury it deep, and cover it with salt so it never grows back. Now, you mentioned civil disobedience earlier, and you also call it peaceful noncompliance.
Right.
I'd like to share a little something with you and the listeners from Ben Stone of BagQuaker.com. He did a podcast series called Beyond Civil Disobedience. And this is from his show notes that were published in the Daily Anarchist. Civil disobedience is largely a pacifier. It's not useless, but let's consider what we're doing and why we're doing it and whether it will accomplish our goal. First, some definitions. Civil disobedience is a symbolic or ritualistic violation of the law rather than a rejection of the system as a whole. The civil disobedient, finding legitimate avenues of change blocked or non-existent, sees himself as obligated by a higher extra-legal principle to break some specific law. By submitting to punishment, the civil disobedient hopes to set a moral example that will provoke the majority of the government into effecting meaningful political, social, or economic change.
So you don't think civil disobedience works?
I think disobedience works. I think that once you get rid of this religion of the state, this religion that makes governments and states legitimate, that some men may have dominion over others and bark orders at them and basically torment them for their own good, once that is gone, then you have a way of stopping this problem.
So why do you criticize civil disobedience? I mean, I don't get your point. Why do you bring that up?
I'm not criticizing civil disobedience. What I'm saying is, it's kind of like going to the government court to get the cops to quit harassing you.
Yeah, it's not going to work.
Yeah, the Yeah, it's like voting harder or getting the right people in charge.
Well, I can speak from personal experience. For those who don't know me, I created a movie in 2012 in which I was arrested 5 times here in my home of Keene, New Hampshire for victimless crimes. And people can watch it free. It's on YouTube online at victimlesscrimespree.com. And I learned that when a person commits acts of civil disobedience or peaceful noncompliance, essentially when you say no to a government agent who gives you an order, there are going to be some pretty bad consequences. And I went to jail. I suffered through several trials, all of it essentially for naught. I mean, I did my best to make it worthwhile by producing the movie, but there were no more freedoms gained by my acts of civil disobedience. It didn't enhance freedom for anyone. It just put me in a bad position, ended me up in jail. So you say farmers should not be doing this. What should they be doing?
Well, I'm not saying that they shouldn't be engaging in civil disobedience. There is no one solution. There is no one cause to what brought things to what they are today. You can't boil a gallon of water and call it soup. You have to throw a lot of stuff in before you can call it soup.
Okay, so what do you? What's your soup got in it? What's your disobedience soup?
I'm personally a firm believer in making government completely irrelevant.
Well, yeah, you said that. Well, yeah. What's the Michigan Urban Farming Initiative? What are they doing? Are they replacing government?
Well, they're not really replacing government, but they're providing a service, and they are just one tiny ingredient in the soup.
And you visited the Michigan Urban Farm Initiative recently. Where are they located? Are they close to you?
Yeah, they are in Detroit. They're in an area called North End, just maybe a couple miles from where I work.
I think I heard about this group once upon a time because I do a podcast called Peace News Now, and I reported on a group that purchased a block of Detroit property, and the goal was to convert this old abandoned house or whatever, I guess tear it down or make a sort of gardening area, and then produce food for the community. Is this the same group?
It could be. There are a number of these groups that have sparked up.
Cool. But what do they do?
They are a nonprofit group, and they have purchased, I believe, a couple houses and a building. They are renovating the houses. I think a couple people might even be living in them right now.
Rad.
But they've also taken about a little bit more than an acre of land, and they're farming on it. And it's organic farming, so they're not using any pesticides or anything like that. They had the soil tested before they started working with it. On the other side of the street where they have area that they farm, and they also have a building over there which will be their headquarters building. Their plan with the headquarters building is to teach classes in there on canning, how to farm your own stuff, how to do a lot of different things. And the young lady, Lavina, who's one of the interns, says that they may turn it into a hostel so that if people that are coming through town, and let's say they're on a nationwide urban farming tour or something like that, they could crash there for a couple of days, take part in the activities and everything else. But on the corner of that side of the street, they have land that used to be a gas station. The gas station's torn down, and obviously they can't farm in the ground where the gas station was.
Why not? It's probably got nitrates in it.
I'm pretty sure that it's permanently contaminated. But
it
anyway,
sounds good for growing tomatoes. I mean, hey, if New Jersey can be the Garden State, then I think you can grow anything on oil-laden land.
Yeah, but what they're using is planting beds.
Okay. Oh, okay. So that makes sense. So they raise them up a little bit, and then they can dump some new soil on there, and they can grow things fresh.
Yeah.
Now, how many of these buildings and classes aren't built and taught by government agents?
They are independent. As a matter of fact, my understanding is that they're really not doing anything with government. And I wouldn't say that they're doing things in spite of government so much, but they are adhering to the different rules, regulations, and the young lady that took me on the tour was showing me the chicken coop. They're hoping to get some chickens, but they can only do certain things with the chickens because of the rules and regulations that go along with it.
Now, how is it possible that they're able to farm and produce food without the help of government?
I don't know.
I don't know how they do it.
Well, it's so not what like we're talking about roads here.
What are they? Right, it's not that complicated. Now, what do they produce? What did you see when you went there? You took some pictures. Who did you see? What sort of foods did you see? Is it enough to feed a community? Can they actually feed the city with this stuff?
Well, not the city, but I'm sure they could probably take care of a neighborhood fairly well.
Okay. And it,
but they had
one block?
Yeah. And they had different squash, tomatoes, green beans, green peppers, eggplant. I wound up getting 3 eggplants, a big bag of green beans, and 6 different squashes. And I can't even remember if there's anything else in there for a whopping $6.
Wow.
Their funding comes from private donations from corporations. General Motors is a large donator, also a smaller business. And they have, I believe it was 3 local restaurants that they supply to. So they sell to these local restaurants at retail price. But wow. they're not licensed and permitted to open up a stand and sell vegetables at retail price there. So what they do is they offer the vegetables for a suggested donation.
And so that's what you were able to pick up, some vegetables for a suggested donation?
Yeah.
So isn't it weird that, like, you need to, in order to comply with these government regulations, the language is all that really needs to change. The stand is the same, the people are the same, the prices are the same, it's just the language. This is a donation rather than you're purchasing this. I mean, really, everything else is the same. It's just the language that changes, isn't it?
Right. You can't engage in commerce unless you have permission. And if you have something like raw milk or unrefrigerated eggs with feathers on it, you'll have a bureaucrat come in and say, put down that food.
Halt. Put down the eggs. So, okay, you took pictures of these raised beds. About how high are they? How high off the ground do you have to get to separate your soil from oil?
Well, these planters were, I'd say about 2.5-3 feet up.
Wow.
So, but I mean, it had a solid bottom on there, so I mean, they could just dump the soil in there and plant and everything.
Oh, I see. And they're not even touching the rest of the earth. It's totally isolated.
Yeah, I mean, it's big giant planters, essentially, is what it is.
I see.
But
were there kids involved? Or is it all adults?
There were youngsters, college students. They have a group of interns there. Lavina, the tour guide, who did a wonderful job explaining everything and talking about what they do. She is from Rhode Island, goes to Brown University. There were some other volunteers there. The farmer's market that they had set up on Oakland Avenue, which was just a couple blocks away, you had Alix, who is from France. She's an intern. And Nick, I can't remember where he was from. But they were over manning the booth over there. And there were a couple of other farmers markets out there that were providing fresh fruits and vegetables. And I got a chance to chit-chat with people and really nice time. And
is there only one center so far? I mean, is it one plot of land for the Michigan Urban Farming Initiative? Or is this like several blocks throughout the city?
For their organization, I believe it's just the one location, but there are a number of other organizations that are popping up, and from what I understand, they're going to start working with the other organizations and coordinating their efforts.
Oh man, this is so cool. It seems like a really successful effort, and if one block is successful, well then two should be just double as successful, and I'd like to see these blocks of food farms in the midst of these city food deserts popping up all over the place. Maybe there could be one in your town.
They're doing great stuff on a shoestring budget.
Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message.
with articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Worms. This is the Freedom Fiends. Talking about solutions for food freedom, not just food freedom, but all freedom, ways to enhance your personal freedom by acquiring the food items of your choice. Maybe it could be fresh food delivered locally from an urban environment, like what Lou is sharing with us about the Michigan Urban Farming Initiative. Tell us more about what's going on in Detroit, where people are growing their own food.
Well, it's a good bunch of people. The folks that I talked to, I thought were very nice, very friendly, and doing something good. The organization got written up in a Huffington Post article, and people have this idea that you need some rich guy to come in and redevelop the whole city, or you have to have some great man come in and do these things. But it's just regular people that do this stuff. It starts from the bottom, and that's how it expands.
But were there some leaders? I'm curious to know, in these organizations that are independent from government and are providing good solutions for people, is there some sort of leader who's taking charge of this organization? Is there someone who bosses everyone around, tells them what to do? Or is it really a bottom-up type organization?
Well, it does have an owner and a founder, and okay. It says here in the article, Tyson Gersh, 25 years old, is owner and founder of the Michigan Urban Farming Initiative, MUFI, a nonprofit organization dedicated to engaging community members in sustainable agriculture on vacant plots of land, providing people with nutritious food while making the community more conscientious about where their food comes from.
Whoa.
Gersh, who graduated from the University of Michigan Dearborn this year, is now head of an organization that boasts 2,500 volunteers and grew more than 10,000 pounds of produce this year alone. Using agriculture as a platform to promote education, sustainability, and community while simultaneously reducing socioeconomic disparity, we hope to empower urban communities, Muffy's website reads. So here we have a 25-year-old just graduated from college recently, and he's going out there and he's making a major change in his little slice of the area.
Wow. Talk about taking personal responsibility for improving your community. This guy is incredible. Tyson Gersh, president, co-founder, webmaster of MUFI, the Michigan Urban Farming Initiative, at just 25 years of age. I mean, that's pretty impressive. What were you doing at age 25? Were you running an organization that was feeding, hundreds of Detroit residents and producing 10,000 pounds of food?
Well, I can say I wasn't doing that. I don't know if I can disclose what I was doing at that age.
Uh-oh. Well, I certainly am not. I'm 25 now, and I'm blown away by this man's achievements. Kudos. Hats off to him.
I barely remember 25. That was a long time ago.
Right. And it looks like he's got, what did you say, 2,500 volunteers?
Yeah.
That sounds like, I mean, That's a lot of volunteers. I guess throughout the year, different people decide to do community service. There might be even an opportunity for people who are in some sort of legal trouble to do community service at this urban farming initiative. So tell us more about what the HuffPost article is saying about this organization. Anything else good from them?
Well, that's the little section that they gave him. I heard about this from a friend of mine who was studying sociology at, I think it's one of the local community colleges, and he wound up getting involved with this group for part of his student project. I don't think it was an internship, but I think he had to do like 75 hours of community service, and he wound up going to a couple different places, but he spent the majority of his time with this group. And after his time, he kept volunteering with them because he really liked them. So my buddy William, thanks for introducing me.
Well, I'm glad he did. Now that I'm introduced, I'm on their website. I see it at miufi.org. I guess it's the Michigan Urban Farming Initiative. And they've got a calendar there where you can sign up for volunteer work. It tells you, you know, what hours people are going to be volunteering. So kudos again to this Tyler Gersh guy, who is apparently the webmaster.
Tyson as well Gersh.
As the president. Tyson, yeah, excuse me. Yeah. And you can sign up to volunteer if you're anywhere close to the Michigan area and you'd like to lend a hand. Now, I assume there are other organizations like Muffy that exist elsewhere. Like, for example, I'm in Philadelphia, and I was recently in Philadelphia, and I know that there are some organizations like this, but nowhere near as organized as this Michigan one. So hats off to them. Anything else that you wanted to share about Muffy?
Well, there's a lot of other organizations that do similar things, and nobody voted Tyson into this position. He took it upon himself to do it, and people joined up voluntarily. That's how stuff gets accomplished, through peaceful, voluntary cooperation and interaction.
Worms. And I got one more thing I want to share about jury nullification. I think that's how you beat the man.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Guilty. Not guilty, I say. These farmers are not guilty. They've committed no crime. All right. Lou Sander Fiend is on the line with us here on Freedom Fiends. Hey, Lou.
Howdy, Derek.
Not guilty. Why is that so important? It's about jury nullification. We touched on this at the beginning of the show. We're talking about solutions for enhancing one's personal freedom. We're going to look out for our own freedom. We got to look out for the freedom of others. Part of that involves looking out for those who have been charged with victimless crimes while at the jury box. A lot of people, they know that you can affect political change through the ballot box or the cartridge box. That's what they think. But that's not all. There's also the jury box. Most people forget that citizens, or submitizens, as I sometimes call them, have the power to affect real change when in a jury box. Because you, if you are a juror, have the power to set a person free. You can keep a person from a state cage if your conscience says that they've committed no crime. That's indeed exactly what happened for Vernon Hirschberger, who we mentioned at the beginning of this program, raw milk farmer charged with victimless crimes of selling raw milk. Well, the jury said not guilty, even though technically he was. Why is this important? Because there are activists emphasizing jury nullification all across the country. A new press release reads, "Juror rights activists have started a nationwide campaign to educate the public about our rights if selected for jury duty. James Babb, the facilitator of the project, says, quote, if you are selected for jury duty, the normal instinct is to find a way out of it. That is completely understandable, especially if you don't understand the incredible opportunity of the juror to stop wrongful imprisonment and government tyranny. Every juror has the power to say not guilty if they disagree with the law. Every juror has the power to judge the facts of the case, the law itself, and whether or not the law is being misapplied. This is the power of jury nullification, a centuries-old tradition that goes back to the Magna Carta. A single juror with a conscience can send a peaceful man home to his family instead of to a cage. Have you ever taken jury duty, Lou?
I've been bounced off of the jury, and the one time that I was selected, I didn't make it through voir dire. And it wasn't because they thought that I was a radical. It was just because they felt that I may have an emotional connection to the case.
Voir dire? What's that?
Voir dire is to look into, and that's where they question the jury to find out where they stand, what their beliefs are, and things like that.
So you've never been selected for a jury?
No, I have not.
When did you first hear about jury nullification?
It was a couple of years ago. And basically it was, I heard about nullification, both jury nullification and state nullification, and then I extrapolated it myself to individual nullification. Hearing about the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850, and then I later learned about the Fugitive Slave Act of 1793, and then I also learned that fugitive slave laws were in the Constitution in Article 4, Section 2, Clause 3.
Well, listen to this. It says, according to this campaign, that on October 10th, the ad campaign began in the nation's capital. A large illuminated diorama ad is on display at the Judiciary Square Metrorail station. Two imposing pylon ads are on display at the Archives station. These, of course, are places where people are going to be taking the train. If they have jury duty, they're going to have to go through the Judiciary Square and the Archives Metro Rail stations in D.C. So this is the perfect location. And the headlines of these ads reads, jury duty? Know your rights. And Google jury nullification. Additional matching postcards have been created for street outreach. What a successful campaign. The majority of the funds were crowdsourced using social media. In less than 1 week, nearly $3,000 was raised to start the campaign. And based on this success, future ad locations are in the works for new locations. I mean, this press release is exactly what this country, it's what the world needs. People to say, you mean I can vote my conscience and I won't be punished for it? I can actually stand on principle and support my fellow man against the will of the government? It's true. You have that power.
That is a very key point, and I'm going to go slightly off topic, but I'll bring it back. I was watching Judge Napolitano on Fox and Friends one morning, and one of the statocrats was complaining about Edward Snowden, and the statocrat says, well, what would it look like if people disobeyed the government? And Judge Napolitano's answer was kind of like this, but I'm going to spice it up a little bit more, and I'm going to invoke the civics class nonsense that we were taught. What would it look like if people disobeyed those laws and followed their conscience? It would look like a free country. It would look like the people are the rightful masters of government and not the other way around.
Ooh. Yeah, often that line does get blurred, doesn't it? I ask myself all the time, you know, am I their servant or are they mine? I don't think it's either, frankly.
If you want to know who the servant and master is, just figure out who barks the orders and who metes out the punishment for disobedience.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think there are ways that we can peacefully coexist. And hopefully, if I can peacefully coexist while escaping a state cage for long enough, I can explain to these law enforcers and other government agents that they really ought to stop hurting peaceful people. You know, that's all I want, is for us to all be able to get along and that they can stop hurting peaceful people. Hopefully, jury nullification will play a big role in that as people reawaken to the fact that they can vote their conscience. The next, yes?
You do know that jury nullification is what ended Prohibition back in 1933.
Yes, and was a huge part of ending the Fugitive Slave Act, where northern states were able to nullify the laws that said they had to return southern slaves. People said, no way! My conscience won't allow it. You can do what you will to me, but I won't support returning this slave, or I won't support caging this pot farmer, as a modern day example might be. That just happened here in New Hampshire, where a New Hampshire man was found guilty, or, well, he was caught red-handed, so to speak, growing 15 marijuana plants. Now, he claimed they were for his religion and for his health. He explained this to the jury, and they said, yeah, okay, that's fine. Even though he admitted to having these 15 plants, even though that is illegal, technically, in violation of the law, the jury said, not guilty. Not because he isn't guilty, but because they think the law is stupid. And you can do that, too. You just don't know that you have the power. In a lot of states, they don't explain that to the jury. The judge is very stern about, you must follow the rules as I explain them. You must follow the exact letter of the law as I explain it. And often, judges just hand down a decision to the jury. They really do no deliberating at all. They just read what the judge wants them to.
Put down that plant.
Right. But here
put down
in,
that food.
In New Hampshire and in other states, jury nullification is a lot more popular and is actually employed. The next scheduled locations for these ads are in Phoenix, Arizona, and Los Angeles, California, and over $1,000 has already been raised. So if you'd like to see jury nullification ads in your town, you can email jamesbabb@mac.com. He says, many of us were inspired by former Penn professor Dr. Julian Heichlin, who's traveled the country to pamphlet near courthouses, informing potential jurors of their right to nullify bad laws. We want to build on his work. Are you familiar with Julian Heichlin, Lou?
No, I'm not, but I have spoken with Kirsten from the Fully Informed Jury Association. She did a presentation for my group, the Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition, a couple months ago, and she went over all the details of jury nullification, how it is our right, how it is our duty, and all the good stuff that goes along with that.
That's right. It's more important now than ever because everybody knows today's justice system is polluted with victimless crimes and unjust laws. The incarceration rate in the U.S. is the highest in the world, ranking number one for both the most prisoners and the highest percentage of people in cages. Every day, people are arrested for violating drug prohibition laws or selling raw milk or lemonade, exercising the right of self-defense, and even collecting rainwater or growing a garden on your own property. That can all just get you arrested. But James Babb, the activist who's taken charge of putting up these jury nullification billboards, says, in addition to destroying the lives of peaceful people, this culture of incarceration has created an unbearable tax burden. As the justice system becomes more corrupt, the role of the juror becomes more important than ever. I would agree with him.
Definitely.
Now, this ad campaign has already caused a stir. According to the Washington Post, prosecutors have been scrambling to ensure that the billboard's message doesn't influence their cases. An informed jury is clearly a threat to the establishment. Isn't that interesting that the prosecutors at the federal level in Washington, D.C. would be concerned that the jurors would know they have the right to vote their conscience? What does that say about what they're doing?
It shows that they know that they're wrong. When a cop pulls somebody over and says, just doing my job, it's a subconscious admission that they know that they're being thugs. If you were a cop and you arrested a serial killer or serial rapist, would you hang your head low and tell the rapist or murderer that you're just doing your job?
Well, what do you think? Would you be proud of those actions? Would you wear a camera? What's the solution? To film these cops or what?
It's film the cops, but also to replace the cops. Here in Detroit, we have Threat Management Center, which Cop Block has done great reporting on and promotion.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You have one of the most unique solutions to replacing the police ever. There's also Peacekeeper, which is an app anyone can use if they have an iPhone. I think there's also an Android app you can download. It's a way to be connected with your friends and neighbors, send out emergency alerts. We'll be back talking about more solutions when we return from the free market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
With liberty, calming the hamster in your brain this evening. Talking with Lusander Fien about some troubles in the area of freedom and food, farmers under attack by government agents, interfering with voluntary interactions, just regular people trying to acquire food, having troubles with that, having to take the government to court. Employee jury nullification. This is happening all over the country. Then we talk some solutions about what's going on in the Michigan Urban Farming Initiative. Lou, you even visited them yourself. Is this a real solution? Is this? Do you think this is the replacing government or going around government? Like we were talking about all of these different strategies that the farmers are employing to enhance their freedom, their food freedom, and their ability to deal privately with their customers. So is this the real solution to get a 503C whatever?
501C3?
Yeah. And to do urban farming?
It's part of it. And I want to riff on something that you said in the last segment about the jury nullification.
What?
You said, why would the government try to take steps to keep people from being informed about their rights as jurors?
Yeah, don't they want people to be informed? Isn't the government trying to inform the people about their rights?
Yeah, well, let's add on to that. Why would, if you have people that need subsidized food, why would you stop people from producing cheap food? Why would you stop the supply of food from increasing, driving down the price? And something else, I heard this not too long ago. You can tell the legitimacy of a government by the security measures that it takes to protect itself rather than its people. Hmm. You've been to plenty of courthouses, and these days you can't go through a courthouse without going through a metal detector, emptying your pockets. You can't take your phone in. You can't do this. You can't do that.
Right.
I personally think that by people being independent, because as Ludwig von Mises said, government is the negation of liberty. I think by people becoming more independent in their food, in their defense, you mentioned the Peacekeeper app. Peacekeeper or Peacemaker?
Peacekeeper.
Okay.
It's all one word.
Yeah. All of these things have come about because of the rampant government failure. When it comes to urban renewal projects, you can scour the internet and you'll find all these articles about all these proposed projects that are in the works. They're planning, they're funded. You got money for this, you got money for that. But when you do a search to find out about these projects that have been completed and have been successful, not even Google can find it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so the solution really is independence. I mean, it sounds so simple, right? But that's really what it's about, is declaring personal independence. And that means taking personal responsibility for where you source your food, how you source your energy. I mean, we didn't talk about energy production on this episode, but that's just as important as sourcing your food. Indeed, some might even argue more important, because how are you going to support your farm if you don't have energy? But it's taking personal responsibility. If it's maybe what I do, which is having a small garden in the backyard, or if it's visiting a co-op like the Michigan Urban Farming Initiative, like Lou can do in Detroit, all the way to employing services like, what's the peacekeeper organization that you call? Detroit Tactical?
Threat Management Center.
Threat Management Center. So all of these options are appearing. You're right, because the state is failing, Lou, and there's nothing we can do about it except prepare and provide alternatives, and then use those alternatives and help get the word out that they exist.
Yeah, one of the beautiful things about Detroit is the faith in government is dwindling and diminishing. They had 20% show rate in the last mayoral election. That's a whopping 20%. So basically, I think 11 or 12% of the city, of the eligible voters, elected the mayor. But it's not enough to not participate in the vote. It's important to not participate in the election results, to live your life, to go out, to make things happen. If you believe in helping your neighbors and your community, then do that.
I agree. It's important to live as free as possible. Albert Camus said something to the effect of, "Live so free that your very existence is an act of disobedience."
Worms, I look forward to seeing you in August at the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, Derek.
Worms, let's provide those solutions and inspire the world. This is the Freedom Fiends. We'll return tomorrow night to tase you with liberty and calm the hamster in your brain.